Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, good morning to you on this final day of January. Glad you chose to spend your time with us. Mark Coxon here alongside Kim St. Ange and Carl Middleman. Sue Thomas, keeping an eye on your morning drive this morning. I don't see any rain out there today. Hopefully you're not having too bad of a morning, and we will continue to keep an eye on that. If you're following us on the socials, thank you for that. We are live up on YouTube and Rumble and X. I'm finally getting used to saying X and Facebook this morning. We'll be following along with your comments on there as you comment on things we're talking about here on the show. And you can always download the podcast. It's really easy there at 971talk.com or on the Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast. We put everything up there. If you missed our interview earlier with Eric Burleson, the congressman from the 7th Congressional District in Washington, he gave us some of his thoughts on the crash in Washington, D.C., and some of the nomination hearings. We did that about 7:08 this morning. So you can go back and hit the rewind button on the Odyssey app, and you can listen to that. We're trying to make it as easy for you as possible. Just a quick reminder, we are feeding our first responders. A little later today, I'm going to be going out and surprising some folks. Well, actually, we warned them that we're coming. But you can go on our website at 971talk.com under the contest tab there, and you can nominate a first responder. We're not talking about a department. We're talking about an individual, a police officer, a firefighter, maybe a dispatcher, EMS, somebody you know who's worked extra hard either for you or in the community. We'll pick a winner each month. Grillmaster Tony makes the food. I'm going to go down and pick that up here shortly after the show, and then I'll be delivering it myself today to our winner. So you can nominate your favorite first responder at 971talk.com. Please get on there and give us some more nominations. We've had some great choices to pick from so far, and the folks at Air Evac are going to be eating well today thanks to Tony Stone. So thank you, Tony, for that. That's good stuff. All right, coming up, we are going to talk to Dennis Hancock. Remember, he's the county councilman that, oddly, you know, I'm sure it was all just coincidence. Wesley Bell decided he was going to press charges against him, claimed he violated some nepotism policy, and lo and behold, tried to pull him off county council right before a really important vote that they would have needed his vote in order to get it an issue placed on the ballot that would have let the county council have its own attorney to rely on instead of having to use Sam Page's personal attorney for the county executive. And he went to court. He beat that. And now that Wesley Bell is gone and no more political shenanigans are going on, that case has been settled. And we're going to get Dennis on here to talk about all the dirty politics that have gone on here coming up about 8:20 this morning. Be sure and stay tuned for that. Right now, though, I do want to get to our top stories. Carl, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Our goal is simple tonight. To raise more money than the Dodgers spent on free agents.
Yeah, that is Billy Crystal there. For all of you Billy Crystal fans out there, he's back. He lost his house in those L.A. fires. They had a big concert last night to raise money for that and to try to apparently they had some really rich guy that owns the Coliseum out there who was matching each donation. So they raised millions of dollars last night.
Unfortunately, there are some Democrat senators who still don't understand the principle of freedom of religion and Article 6 of the Constitution.
Yeah, Tulsi Gabbard there. I thought she did very well yesterday, but apparently her answer on Edward Snowden has about six or seven Republican senators threatening not to vote for her when her vote comes up on the floor. We'll talk more about it.
Bernie, the problem of corruption is not just in the federal agencies. It's in Congress, too. Almost all the members of this panel are accepting, including yourself, are accepting millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical industry.
Bought and paid for. Most of the Democrats, some of the Republicans on their questioning for RFK Jr. for his thoughts on vaccines have accepted millions and millions of dollars from Big Pharma.
We are going to ensure we're going to create our own kind of state ICE program.
The legislation goes on to include enlisting licensed bounty hunters and taking DNA samples from those captured.
Yeah, how about that? You go, Senator David Gregory, the new senator out there from Chesterfield, Senate District 15, and he has proposed the bounty hunter bill. That's what they're calling it, where you can help if you're already somebody who's like a bail bondsman, you could get trained to be a bounty hunter to bring in known criminal illegal aliens. And apparently it goes a little further than that. And of course, when our local TV stations went down to cover it, what you have to do is go out and find somebody who is affected by it, who will cry on camera and claim that it's unjust. And of course, they did just that. Channel 4 did that yesterday as part of their story, too, because what this bill would do is make being an illegal alien in the state of Missouri a felony. You would be considered a felon if you were in the country illegally and decided to come to the state of Missouri. Well, of course, that gives law enforcement a lot more options at that point. And this bill is going to be debated down in Jeff City, and some version of it will probably pass. I'd be surprised, actually, if it doesn't. Here's more on what David Gregory's bill would do. Go to Cut 14, Carl.
Bill 72, introduced by St. Louis County Senator David Gregory, says, quote, "The offense of trespass by an illegal alien under this section is a felony for which the authorized term of imprisonment is life imprisonment."
We are going to ensure we're going to create our own kind of state ICE program.
The legislation goes on to include enlisting licensed bounty hunters and taking DNA samples from those captured.
This bill will make it a felony to be here in this state illegally. This bill will finally allow our police officers to arrest illegal immigrants.
Oh, great Odin's Raven.
Imagine that. Shocking that we would make people follow the law. We're not a sanctuary state. We're not a sanctuary city, for that matter. And this is the natural reaction we've learned from the mainstream media in this country, which is part and parcel the PR wing of the Democratic Party. So the liberals and the Democrats are opposed to immigration enforcement, period. And they go out and they tell lies about the fact that if you're not opposed to it, you must be opposed to immigration. Fake news. That's not true. Every Republican I know embraces immigration as long as it's legal. We're the most generous country in the world when it comes to immigration and asylum, for that matter. But if you broke into our country, if you kicked in the front door and you're now living off of my paycheck in my living room and expecting me to feed you and clothe you and take you to the doctor, no, that's we're not doing that anymore. That's what the Trump administration has decided. But we have to make you feel bad about that if we're the Democrats or the progressives who support it. So they went out and they found a young lady who lives here, whose grandparents came here, apparently, from what I can tell in the story, illegally many years ago. And of course, she's now an anchor baby and a citizen as a result of that. Here's her story. Go to cut 15.
Jessica tells me the legacy her Mexican heritage brought to St. Louis motivates her to keep fighting for others who want the same American dream she lives every day.
It saddens, you know, my family, because it's an injustice, and they want everyone to be able to live in peace.
It's unjust, Kim, because we're enforcing the law. What's unjust is that 11 or 12 million people have been allowed in the country by Joe Biden who shouldn't be here. They have no right to be here. We have a legal immigration system set up. And just because your grandparents broke the law and you happen to now be legal by birth does not mean your grandparents didn't still break the law. Mm-hmm. I'm not feeling the empathy here.
For every story they do like that, talking to somebody who's impacted, talk to somebody else who lost somebody at the hands of an illegal.
I know a lot of people who came here from Mexico legally who don't agree with this illegal immigration problem we have going on, and Trump administration's on their way to fixing it, it looks like. All right, coming up, County Councilman Dennis Hancock. We'll be back. All right, welcome back. So we followed this story as it first happened. In fact, we had Dennis Hancock on here talking about this after Sam Page and Wesley Bell tried to get him kicked off county council. It's all been settled now, and we're glad to welcome Dennis Hancock from the 3rd Council District in St. Louis County back onto the show. Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Absolutely. Good to hear your voice again. And, you know, I saw this settlement agreement that came out, I guess, near the end of last week, right, with the new county prosecutor.
Yeah, it was last Friday. And after looking at the evidence that they had, she worked with our attorney, and we were able to reach a settlement agreement. And they withdrew their petition with prejudice.
Yeah,
so now, it's done.
Correct my memory here, but I mean, your position on this all along was that whatever it was concerning a family member was a mistake on your part. You didn't realize it, and that she never actually went to work for you.
Well, yeah, the facts are that in order to prove nepotism, there have to be two different pieces. One, that she's a relative, and I've made no secret about it. She's been my stepdaughter for almost 30 years now. The other part is that she has to actually be hired, and that's where I believe the prosecutor described it as problematic for them to prove that she was actually ever a county employee.
Because you told me you didn't realize it when the issue came up, correct?
Yeah, I didn't realize it that there was a prohibition in the state constitution.
Yes.
And I think that, the facts didn't support a nepotism case because there's no, like I said, there's no evidence to support that she was ever actually hired by the county.
And the important thing is that it's gone away. I mean, that's the important thing about our conversation today. But I don't believe in coincidence when it comes to politics. When this thing was first announced and they tried to pull you off the council that day when an important vote was coming up, I mean, that just reeked of intentionality, right?
Oh, I agree. And as it's turned out, it was probably correct. That was the vote to allow to put on the ballot, allowing the council to hire its own attorney, so that we're not working for the county councilor.
We shouldn't be surprised. I mean, after the Steve Stenger incident as county executive and everything else, I'm not surprised at any of the dirty politics that Sam Page tries. I mean, he tried it with Gretchen Bangert when she was running for council in the primary, trying to basically bribe her, it sounded like, not to run. But people may see a pattern here.
Well, I think that's right. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing is the council is now focused on getting the work done that we were all elected to do. And the county executive seems to be oblivious to the fact that we're still having budget issues and that we can't seem to plow snow in unincorporated St. Louis County, and we can't seem to collect the taxes that people are sending in to us this time of year.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm almost sensing a shift on the council because I think it was Shalonda Webb who's liberal, right, who had introduced a bill to essentially limit Sam Page's power. The initial idea was that you guys could fire him if you had 5 out of the 7 votes, and then my understanding was that it instead allowed you to fire anyone that he appoints to the head of a department. What's the latest with that?
That is actually will be on the ballot in April. We withdrew the part about the county executive because there was a lot of question about, you know, should we be in a position to undo the will of the voters, or is there a better way to do that? And I think by allowing us to essentially fire department heads, we can then get people in office or in those positions who are open to at least providing us with the information we need to make good, informed decisions. And
right.
So often we're being stonewalled by unelected bureaucrats.
County Councilman Dennis Hancock with us this morning. Sorry about that, Dennis. I mean to catch you. I thought
sure.
You were done. Go ahead.
No. I was just I think when the voters look at that in April, I hope that they consider that these are people that the council has to vote to approve anyway. So it seems to me that if we have to vote to approve them, we should be able to vote to remove them.
You could even remove the new prosecuting attorney, right, Melissa Price Smith, if this passes in April?
No, I don't think so, because that was all settled by
the
courts that she is a state employee.
Well, it sounds like she's doing a pretty fair-handed job over there so far. So I'm glad the courts went the way they did on that one. I got to be honest with you.
Well, and I think she sent the right signal in her announcement last Friday that there are 10,000 outstanding criminal cases in St. Louis County. That's where her office needs to be focused. And that was one of the things that impressed us when we had our hearing with her and the gentleman that the county executive wanted to appoint to that role, that she was serious about prosecuting crime,
which is a
different approach than Mr. Bell had.
It's true. Dennis, I got about a minute left here. Is there still conversation about building a new city or county Taj Mahal?
Well, it hasn't died completely, apparently, but it's nothing on the priority list for the council.
Good.
We have other things to worry about right now.
Yeah, or just stay where you are and put in a sprinkler system, one of the two, right? Be a lot cheaper.
Exactly. That would be my approach.
That would be a lot less expensive, for sure. Well, Dennis Hancock, glad that that's all been resolved, and we appreciate your time this morning. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. Talk to you soon. Glad we kind of got a clean finish to that one, and it's all behind me. The prosecutors signed an agreement that it's not coming back. That's good. All right, coming up, Jane Duker. You hear her all the time here on the Mark Reardon Show in the afternoons, and I invited her in this morning because I wanted to talk to her about this effort by the city to use Ram settlement money to pay for daycare and maybe college for city employees. We'll get to all that and more when we get back.
Before becoming governor, I promised Missourians I would take action on crime as soon as my hand left the Bible on Inauguration Day. And we did just that, signing 6 executive orders that were developed based on input from law enforcement to launch our Safer Missouri initiative. From organizing regional efforts to arrest dangerous fugitives, to charging our state troopers to work with the Trump administration and our federal partners on an effort to crack down on illegal immigration, to establishing a statewide program that encourages communities to support law enforcement. As I've said before, in the coming weeks, months, and years, our administration will be relentless in our pursuit to make Missouri a place where it's easier to be a cop than a criminal.
Yeah, thank you. Governor Kehoe there talking about crime in the state of Missouri and what he'd like to do to help crack down on it. And, I saw a quote from him yesterday where he said he really didn't want to make this political. But the mayor of St. Louis is certainly making it political. And the chief, Tracy, suggested anybody supporting it doesn't support police. I heard him say that earlier this week. They're really on the offensive here to try to stop this thing. We got Jane Duker, attorney here on the radio with us this morning. Jane, thank you for getting up early and giving me a minute today.
Oh, I'm my pleasure. Great to hear from you.
It's great to have you on. So on to the Kehoe statements here and the fact that Mayor Tashara Jones and Chief Tracy have been firing with both barrels, so to speak, against the state takeover.
Yes. I mean, I think they know that it's getting great momentum in Jefferson City. So they're truly on the offensive. And it's a shame. I mean, and for him to indicate that you don't support police if you support board control is complete falsehood. Every police officer, both the St. Louis Police Officers Association and the labor organization, ESOP, the Ethical Society of Police, which is the minority group, are 100% in favor of board control. And, these are St. Louis citizens. It's not like the state is taking over. These are St. Louis citizens, just like in St. Louis County, that will be running the police department. And so it's very sad, but make no mistake. If you support police, you are supporting board control of the police department.
Yeah, I did just to second that for a moment, and I made this point last week. I know a lot of St. Louis police officers, and I'm good friends with a number of them as well, and I've never heard anybody from a police officer perspective who is not in favor of the state taking back control. The chief acts like you're not supporting those people, but to your point, every single one of them that I know is in support of this idea.
And I've testified in every hearing for this bill for the last 4 years. And the bottom line is, I mean, they will go to these committees and they will just straight up lie. It's very, very concerning. So, for example, when I was obviously saying that we cannot verify the crime data that they peddle to the public. And I said the reason they don't put a year's worth of data on the web, because then you could actually check the numbers that they put forth. And the chief looked at the senator's eyes and said, oh, the data's right there. I don't need to print anything off because the data is on the web. And, you know, a senator pulls out the phone and says, well, it says on your website that there's only 6 months of data.
Yeah.
It's those kinds of things that are, you know, we're the third year into this with Chief Tracy, and they've been hearing the same thing. Give me more time. We're reducing crime, but nobody feels it. I mean, they tell you the crime is not happening. Well, when you don't have enough police officers to actually respond to the crime, don't have enough 911 operators to actually answer the phone when someone calls, that tends to have an adverse effect on reported crime.
So what are
and
the,
people are still feeling it.
What are the biggest changes if the state takes over control of the department? Obviously, Chief Tracy would probably lose some power, but I mean, what does that look like? What could we tangibly see change?
It's interesting because I actually think the chief would probably be better off under board control. One, all policies, allocation of resources will not be politicized. So not only do we have a very horrible shortage of officers, we have an allocation problem where the resources go and where the most people are. So remember July 4th when they invited, you know, hundreds of thousands of people down to the riverfront for, you know, the fireworks. But then afterwards, they didn't have any police for when the people left. And then you had a complete melee. Okay. Allocation of resources. How many officers are actually on the street? And, you know, what areas of the city, all of that policy would now go to the board. All spending. So the police budget that has technically increased, but it's not for policing. It's for Office of Violence Prevention and all of this other nonsense that's put into the police budget. Well, the police board is not, you know, going to govern those funds. So we'll actually have an entity that will have be able to discuss the funds and run the budget that's actually for policing.
Yeah.
And that would be extremely important. They would start recruiting again. How about that? I mean, they're not even trying. I mean, we are still, before she cut the 120 vacancies, the recent ones, you know, we were 400 down. So, I mean, that's dangerous.
It's
dangerous for the police and it's dangerous for the citizens.
Well, Jane,
just a few examples.
That's true. We're talking to Jane Duker here. Let's transition to the Transform STL Act that they're trying to pass with this Rams money that you know, I pointed out several times, doesn't include a dime for law enforcement or public safety. But, of course, it adds a lot of perks to being a city employee, I guess, if you count child care.
Yeah, they're getting there.
College.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, college education, you know, and they say, oh, this is, you know, to retain city workers. I'm like, well, then just pay them a living wage. How about that? I mean, you know, there's an option there. Of all of the ARPA money and all of the Rams money, about $740 million, police got like $7 million for like some repairs at headquarters and about $3 million in cars. So of all that money, that's what policing got.
So,
I mean, that shows you what the priority is for the Board of Aldermen. This fund is insane. I mean, look, these guys can't pick up trash. They can't pick up snow. There is no way, you know, they should be handling childcare.
I'm sorry, Jane.
I mean, it's Oh, go ahead.
I wanted to go back really fast. You're talking about just the dumb decisions that the city has made, and Tashara Jones, and she just doesn't know how to run the city. She's the one who's freaking out, it seems like, the most, aside from Chief Tracy, but he's freaking out because the mayor is his boss. Why is she so panicked about board control of the police department? What's the biggest change for her?
If she wasn't running the department in the way that she wanted, she wouldn't care. That right there proves to you why board control is necessary. So she is clearly orchestrating this department in the way she wants it, and she wants to keep it. And it's scary. It makes you wonder how much more control she has over the department. And so, you know, the things that, you know, that we don't see. So I don't understand it. I mean, in fact, if I were her, I would say, well, let the state run it and let's see how it does. And you can sit on the sidelines and complain if you want. Let the state pay for all the lawsuits.
Well, Jane, what is We Power?
Oh, it is some BS organization that was started in 2000. It's sort of an outgrowth of sort of the nonprofit industry that was created off of protesting. And they want to do early childhood care and, you know, child care plus early childhood education. And their goal is to secure $100 million of sustainable government funds to set up some early childhood, you know, hubs. It's all nonsense. It's all smoke and mirrors. These people have no experience. They have nothing to do with education and or child care. They just want to live off of government funds. And nonprofits are great if you can do partnerships with the public and for the public good. But, you know, this is not their job.
Right.
The state's job. I mean, the governor just announced more than $100 million for child care and early childhood development. That's the state's job. I'm sorry if you don't like the way they do it, but that doesn't mean you're qualified to do it. And they're not.
Interesting how these spending decisions are made, for sure. And Jane, we're about to run out of
in trouble.
About to run out of time here, but on the election, I saw you had some advice the other day. Clearly, Mayor Jones is on the ballot there, along with Kara Spencer and Michael Butler and Andrew Jones. They've got this ranked choice voting deal in the city now. What can people do to try to defeat her?
It's not enough to just vote for someone else other than Tashara Jones. Vote for everyone else besides Tashara Jones. So it's important to, you know, because I think it would be fantastic if she actually came in third. And so if we can vote, you know, in whatever order you deem appropriate, vote for the other three. In whatever order you choose, vote for the other three, because those second place votes matter. Those third place votes matter. So don't, and a lot of people are uncomfortable with voting for more than one person, but this system is rigged so that, you know, you're going to want to do that so that we can get rid of her.
Yeah, very good. Well, Jane, I tell you what, I appreciate your time this morning, and that gives people an idea what's going on in the city. And hopefully we're in state control by May.
Oh, I'm hoping sooner.
Yeah, let's hope.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon. Thank you.
All righty, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. All right, thanks. Jane Duker there. Good to get her on this morning. And she is a regular on Reardon's show. I have trouble getting her out of bed this early, though, to be honest.
And, Mark, we're going to have mayoral candidate Andrew Jones on the show with us on Monday.
Yeah, good. We are. I knew we were trying to set that up, and I'm glad you reminded me of that. We're going to get him on. So he'll be on. He's the only Republican that I know of that's running for mayor in the city. Michael Butler is also running. We've had him on the show before in years past. And Kara Spencer, who I guess would have to probably be the strongest opponent that Jones is worried about right now, because somebody just donated $100,000 to her campaign or something. She just got a big campaign contribution.
Bob Clark.
And I'm not sure if we're in better shape or worse shape with Kara Spencer, to be honest with you. But those are your big options this year. All right, we'll get to a quick break. Back in just a minute.
Because he's callous, he's racist, he's sexist, and most of all, he's stupid. He's a deeply stupid man. This is blameless. It's like blaming 9/11 on hummus. It makes no sense. I think maybe he gets jealous when a disaster gets more coverage than him. He's like, I'm the biggest disaster. You point that camera at me right now.
Yeah, failed late night comedian Jimmy Kimmel, top Trump hater in America, was spewing his hatred last night on his show. Now he's latched onto the whole DEI thing. He's mad that Trump pointed out why they really had such disastrous fires in Southern California. That's not what they want to hear out there right now. They held a big fundraiser last night for the fires. But I just wanted to play you that from Kimmel because that you expect what you get out of them. MSNBC, CNN, all losing their minds this morning that Donald Trump would dare to suggest that reverse discrimination played some role in the incompetence either in the air traffic control center or in the helicopter. Caused this. We don't know for sure what caused it yet. Trump did put out on Truth Social earlier that, and I thought this was interesting because I haven't really seen it anywhere else, but Trump did put out earlier that the helicopter was far above where it should have been, I think is what he said. It was supposed to be at 200 feet, and instead it was much higher. He doesn't say how much higher. Seems like he's basically suggesting that it seems like the reason for the crash is pretty clear, I think, is what the president was putting out this morning. We'll find out. There have been a lot of rumors floating around about who the third person was in the helicopter. And there's been mention and suggestion and rumors, even a Pakistani newspaper picked this up this morning and ran it like a real story. I mean, I've never even heard of this. The Tribune, the Express Tribune from Pakistan ran a story that the supposedly one of the pilots of the military helicopter was a trans man or trans woman, I guess a man that had transitioned to a woman. But there was no evidence of that, and nobody has confirmed it. We don't know who the third person was in the helicopter. That individual has now gone on Facebook and said, "This is a lie. I'm alive and well. I wasn't on the helicopter." So I don't know how that rumor even got started. That's just why I haven't talked about it this morning, because I didn't see any legitimate news source reporting that. So you got to be really careful with this stuff.
No, you do. I mean, I'm sure that won't be the only rumor that spreads about this.
Right.
But you just have to wonder, okay, was it the air traffic controller who clearly they were understaffed, one person doing the work of two people. They didn't catch that the altitude was way off, because I assume that's something in addition to a flight path that they would also be tracking and which should send up red flags to them. Or was it error on the pilot of the helicopter, or was this intentional? I know I've asked that question this morning to, I think, Jim Carafano. I'm not saying it was intentional, but you don't know. I mean, that person could have been suicidal and went up there, and they know enough planes come in and out. I don't know. I just don't think you can 100% rule that out yet.
Yes, I would agree with that. Let's pause that, Carl, whatever that sound is coming up there. No, you can't rule anything out. Maybe Donald Trump shouldn't have suggested DEI, but maybe he knows something we don't. So I'm waiting to find out what exactly caused him to say that. We do know that even Republicans had gone to the floor of the House a year ago and warned that these changes in the FAA, this reduction of standards for people that were going to be in these control towers, was a potential problem. And many speculated there's going to be another crash soon because they're understaffed and they're underprepared for these jobs. So maybe that's what urged the president to say that. One thing we didn't talk about a lot today are these tariffs. Supposedly tomorrow, tariffs are going to kick in on Canada and Mexico. Now, you know, the president often uses these as leverage, so I don't know if he'll actually put them into effect tomorrow or not. But he's told them that they need to fix problems on the border, illegal drugs getting into the United States, and if they're not willing to step up and do that, then they're going to punish them with tariffs. And again, that's supposed to happen tomorrow. We'll see. I just don't know. Brian Kilmeade will be coming up here in just a couple of minutes. He'll have the latest out of Washington, D.C., and maybe whether or not they're counting heads in the Tulsi Gabbard confirmation. She had six or seven Republicans claiming they were opposed to her after her hearing yesterday. I don't know if they can salvage that position for DNI or not. Maybe Brian's guests have a few more insight on it. Insights, I should say. Annie Fry is coming up at noon today. Mark Reardon, 3 to 6. Have a great weekend. Kim and Carl and Sue and Ethan and I will see you back here Monday morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.